Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are convening. It's the first new moon, the crescent moon after the equinox, in Libra, which is, it's not causing peace and justice, it's assigning peace and justice. There we go. So just a brief weaving of context before I bring in our splendid guest, and worthy local participation as key to good citizenship for the earth. We just go, okay, so not causing peace and justice, but assigning it. The patterns are, you know, we are always voting for reality with everything. You know, and, you know, the presence of oneness. My friend Deborah Felmuth in the Middle East says, shalom is not the absence of conflict, but the presence of oneness. We're all in this together. We're all in this together. The sun right now, sesquiquadrat Uranus, which says danger to the earth, is on the table. There's a lot on our work table. Venus, sesquiquadrat Neptune, says danger of bamboozlement about everything. Is this the thing or the symbol of the thing? Venus is in Scorpio, which is experienced at composting every form of inquisition. Inquisition is lining up behind us. Just so you know, again, you know, so much out there that's really crucial. You know, Vance is really the front man for Peter Thiel, billionaire tech, Opus Dei, right-wing Christian, just tyranny, and Leonard Leo, right? There we go. Right, but we can compost the Inquisition. We want to be informed and then responsive in ingenious ways. So there we'll be bringing in many, many things as we weave together. So conjure, the word conjure means working with the law and working with the local government. So we are here composting the corruption of cults, right? Pluto in Aquarius, well, in Capricorn, testing all structures of support in the community right now, many of which are collapsing. But we want to rise up. The moon's image right now is Chanticleer announcing a new beginning. We go, all right, let's do that. The image for the sun is coal miners emerging from a dark pit into sunlight. Okay, let's do that. So the toxic mimic of community is cult, where we outsource our autonomy to nefarious, incompetent leaders. So composting the corruption of cults into nutrient for community. Local participation is global citizenship. The Berkeley ceasefire resolution with guest Matt O'Brien, all right, liberating the originating impulse of politics, which is really just dedication to collective well-being, and resonating the moral compass of mutual aid and kinship in all beings. Time for everybody to step up. So welcome, Matt O'Brien.
Well, thank you so much, Caroline. It's such an honor to be on the program with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, my honor, my pleasure. That's right. We were just cahooting backstage going, oh, this is really important. So I exerted many quotes from the article you sent me on the recent thing, but just unfurl the dynamic and the what we need to know and what you would want to call for people to do to inform their local board members of this ceasefire resolution.
Certainly. Thank you. Well, you know, as you know, across the country, Berkeley is known as being this loopy left-wing city that has its own foreign policy and has, you know, made resolutions about the apartheid in South Africa, about, you know, Vietnam War, about various issues of justice across the globe. And we've been the butt of jokes for that. Now we're in the situation where our neighboring cities of Oakland, San Francisco, Richmond, Albany, Hayward, and Daly City have all passed ceasefire resolutions, but the city of Berkeley, famous for such actions, has not. So we started asking ourselves, why is that? And it turns out it has to do with politics and the influence of lobby groups on our city. And we've all heard about the influence of lobby groups on the federal government and how congressional races and congress people are influenced by lobby money. We know about the millions that was spent to defeat Jamal in New York, and I forget her name now, the Missouri congresswoman, millions of dollars spent. And we think, gosh, we're helpless, gosh. But then when it comes to our own city and we see the insidious influence of lobby groups, then it really hits us in a way that's different, because it's so local, and you know that the positions that these elected people are taking is not at all what the people want. And you know that because you live with these people. You're in community with the residents of Berkeley, and you know that the residents of Berkeley favor a ceasefire resolution. So that's what we in Berkeley have been fighting against. We have a number of city council people and the mayor who have firmly placed themselves in the pockets of the lobby groups and against the citizens of Berkeley, and have been working to subvert the democratic processes here and suppress our voices.
Yes. Yeah. And then, yes.
Well, and I was going to say, so after 10 months of wanting a resolution, the city council has the system where there's the agenda committee. So only two city council people and the mayor comprise the agenda committee, and they have made sure, despite multiple demonstrations by the public that we want a ceasefire resolution, they have just been very intransigent and have refused. And it should be pointed out that our mayor took an all-expenses-paid trip to Israel, paid for by an Israel lobby fund. So they certainly are pleased with the investment they made in our mayor, and he's now running for state senate. And so we're very concerned that this opportunistic mayor, politician, who does the bidding of bidding groups, will now become a state senator. So we're working to make sure that doesn't happen as well.
Yes, yes. And part of the guiding story is community engagement. Community engagement is the correct response to danger and corruption and tyranny in many forms. And you mentioned Jamal Bowman, and I'm so ardently admiring of Representative Ruwa, the first Palestinian elected to state government in Georgia, for her lucidity. Almost spoke at the convention, the DNC. Oh, a terrible lapse. But there we go. But she did give her speech outside. But she mentioned, all about the importance of voting, and everybody just make one's dedication when voting, guide me, to do what is good for everybody, in the deepest, deepest way. And she says, yes, Jamal Bowman, but she was, huge amounts of AIPAC money to defeat him. But she said, what also was an issue was 33% of the eligible voters did not show up. Right. And she goes, yes, so there's corruption, but then there's also like, come on, Wolf, here we go. And that's part of the whole dynamic of, who are people voting for? And, it gives me conniption fits every now and then when people go, I'm voting for, I won't even say it. We'll do some public service announcements. And it's true that independent voting, 6 to 12%, not large, but significant, right? Going in this 33 days out to, do we want to keep a democracy or not? But then what you're up for and what we're all up for is, all right, so that's 6 to 12%, but 33% of people who haven't been voting, that community arousal, Saturn, there's danger, and then Saturn quintiles Uranus exactly, which is irresistible eloquence on behalf of mutual aid and kinship and actual community and democracy. So yeah, so there's factors involved. There's the corruption, and then there's the passivity, and we want to get everyone aroused and engaged. Yeah, because when you were narrating this important story that's intimate, and as we've said, Gaza is the moral compass issue of the world. Humanity's on trial. And it is always in our hearts, for many of us, foremost. And it is a conundrum, you know. I mean, it is a conundrum. But you're doing great work. And I'd, you know, asked you, like, well, what shall we do? You know, what would you like us to do? And the peace and justice the resolution must now pass the council, you said?
Yes, yes. Well, interestingly, Berkeley is probably just about the only city in the country that has a peace and justice commission. And it was formed with the idea to provide the city council guidance on some of these issues. So its actual function is to do that. So when certain council members who oppose the resolution, when the reason they offer is that, I don't think Berkeley City Council should be doing foreign policy, it doesn't hold up to scrutiny because the city council years ago designated this commission to advise them on foreign policy. And so once it was clear to us citizens that we weren't going to get any action from the city council toward a resolution, the idea then was, oh, then we can perhaps go through the Peace and Justice Commission, because then when commissions make recommendations or resolutions, they must be taken up by the city council. So what did the city council do once it became clear that that might be the strategy of the citizenry who wants a resolution? Since the beginning of the war, many new commissioners have been named, specifically with the idea of putting in anti-resolution people. And so I personally was affected by this. And incidentally, at the meeting, the Peace and Justice Commission meeting Monday night, the resolution passed 8-7, just narrowly. Of the 7 no votes, 4 were cast by commissioners for whom it was their first meeting. In other words, they were put there by city council members just with the purpose of quashing the resolution. They thought they would get a 7-7 tie and then not have to take it up at the council. But there is a student school board member was able to appoint a counselor. And that commissioner voted in favor of the resolution. So that was kind of how the public was able to triumph over the machinations of the lobby groups and their city councilors. So now the resolution must be taken up by the city council as per city law. However, it likely will be put off until after the election, because our mayor, who has been working assiduously to defeat and quash resolution, is now running for state senate, as I mentioned. And when he was asked about his position on a ceasefire now as a position as a candidate for senate, he said he favored it. So it's all very complicated. So what we need the citizens to do is to stand up, stand against lobbying, stand against the foreign lobby taking over our city, and let each city councilor know that you want a resolution. You do not want the democratic processes of Berkeley subverted. You do not want the voices of our citizenry suppressed. And we do not want our tax dollars going to a foreign country to commit war crimes. Right. I mean, I can tell you that when my own district, we're called District 4. So our city council person just in September removed a pro-resolution peace and justice commissioner to appoint a new commissioner whom he told me was a bridge builder. But people who have been active in the Berkeley Unified School District know that she's actually been quite active at attacking the ethnic studies programs and teachers and free speech within the school district. So she's hardly a bridge builder. But I stressed to him that he really needs to represent all of his constituents, not just some tiny minority lobby that represents a tiny fraction of the of the population of the district. And so I think our city councilors, they really need to hear from us that we do not want a we want a resolution. I mean, there was some very, very compelling testimony at the Peace and Justice Commission the other night. One that I found most compelling was a man, an elderly man with white hair, was very frail, and he must have made a lot of effort to get to the meeting that night and to stand in line to express himself. And he said that he was the son of Holocaust survivors and that his parents would be absolutely appalled at what is happening in Gaza and appalled that the city council has not taken has taken efforts to suppress a resolution. Another really compelling testimony was from a woman who identified herself as one of the first 10 female rabbis, Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb.
And yes, she offered guessed her show.
Well, she offered a really strong moral argument in favor of the resolution and against the killing. And there were many people who identified as Jewish who said they're appalled at this and they do not want their tax money to support it. And they feel betrayed by the city council for trying to quash the resolution. Other testimony came from Palestinian Americans who spoke of their family members being killed and disfigured. And it occurred to me that the commissioners, as well as our city council, they're ignoring the pain that many in our community of Palestinian descent feel and elevating the suffering, say, of Israelis or supporters of Israel here amounts to what many feel is sort of a discrimination, racist discrimination, you know. And I think something has inured them to the pain of the pain that this causes so many. And one of the things that I think a lot of people found really interesting was after public commentary, the commissioners discussed the resolution among themselves and were to vote on it. And the two authors of the resolution are both Jewish. Many of the people who vote against it and are recently appointed also identify as Jewish. And there was a little discussion there where one of the commissioners who opposes a resolution called himself a mainstream Jew and said that the authors were not in the mainstream. And one of them took exception to that, and he found the whole idea of mainstream Jew is both offensive and fabricated, and that the idea that most Jews support the genocide in Gaza is just offensive and racist.
And anti-Semitic, right? Yeah.
And anti-Semitic, yeah, yeah. Another commissioner, another co-author of the resolution is also Jewish. He pointed out that the current Israeli cabinet includes fascists, among them Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. Yeah. And he wondered why other commissioners would support fascists in the Israeli government and actions taken by these fascists that has resulted in so much killing. And, you know, after all, it was fascists who inflicted genocide on the Jews in 1940. So what was really interesting from that meeting was kind of to see that what one group of people that's really opposed to a ceasefire seeks to portray as the Jewish position or mainstream Jews was really didn't hold up to scrutiny. In fact, there were more people who took the position that this does not represent what Jewish people want than those who took the position that this is what Jewish people want. And certainly within the Peace and Justice Commission, there's that conflict.
A smidge of to and fro here, just, and then I'll hand it right back to you. But what you're delineating, right? The it's very Trumpy, right? To put in the fake elector or the fake election board in Georgia, or what you just described, putting in the installing obedient to external, you know, a lobby group authority. So anything that's anywhere is everywhere. So we go. I just wanted to tie it all together. These are all huge issues. Micro participation in Berkeley on out into world, Right. A really good point, standing against fascism in the lobby. And we talk about, divorcing everything in the way of democracy, America divorcing AIPAC. And then here you are in micro Berkeley community going, yeah. And this rousing support. And, when you'd mentioned the wonderful people speaking up, the Palestinian citizen of Berkeley, and there's so much good in the article, which is posted in the website coyotenetworknews.com, as well as at KPFA, the article. You can read all about it for this story. But I love Commissioner Luke Taylor saying, the origin of this resolution is not malice. The origin of this resolution is a phenomenal grief that I've been feeling, that I think many people in this room have been feeling, and a phenomenal sense of powerlessness that the city council doesn't want to listen to us, that our presidential administration will say we would like a ceasefire and then hand over additional 2,000 bombs. So, yeah, no, absolutely. And then just to hand back the 15-member Peace and Justice Commission, this is from the article you sent me, consists of one appointment from each city council member and school director, was established by the city in 1986 with the goal of, quote, creating a world community in which the relations between people are based on equality, respect for human rights, and the abhorrence of exploitation in all forms of expression. Yes. Yes, we're just here to, summon support for that, and in the listening community, and follow Matt's guidance to alert your local board representatives, going, and all of us everywhere too. Again, that this is present with us all the time and must be addressed and resolved, every hour, and the expansion. Of the bombing in Yemen and Syria and Lebanon, it's a conflagration, and this madman, just as Trump is running to keep out of prison, Bibi is running, must keep the genocide and the war going to stay in power and out of prison as well. So we go, all right, so corruption. yeah, no, that what you say is invalid. Invaluable, right? And you'd said also that there was there were parents behind a civil rights complaint alleging anti-Semitism in Berkeley schools, and that the person said she's pro-peace but anti this resolution. She attributed the relatively small turnout of pro-Israel attendees to them feeling unsafe attending Berkeley public meetings. Can you address this? Is there anti-Semitism in Berkeley schools? Is there anything that could remotely be thought of as anti-Semitism in Berkeley schools?
Well, what I will point out is the one person who was removed from the Peace and Justice Committee meeting was against the resolution and was heckling people who were in favor of the resolution. So what we have experienced here in Berkeley is we've certainly experienced a lot of people making charges of anti-Semitism, and I have no doubt there have been instances of it. But what we also have noticed, especially if you talk with informed people in the parent community of the Berkeley Unified Schools, is a coordinated campaign to attack ethnic studies because they teach about ideas of settler colonialism, to attack teachers in the Berkeley schools who teach about Palestine, and essentially to attack freedom of speech. Our superintendent of schools was hauled before Congress. They did not succeed in grilling her like they did the university president. She did a wonderful job. Our school board now, our city has been burdened with legal issues and costs because this group of very lobby-directed parents in the Berkeley Unified Schools done complaints with the Brandeis Center and other lobby groups to kind of suggest that Berkeley's schools are anti-Semitic. But it seems that there have been some investigative reporting, and I would like to encourage all your listeners to go to the website. It was was made because we don't have a really good local paper that reports on local government and corruption. So some citizens, in frustration to not having a paper that will publish this stuff, formed this wonderful website called BerkeleyFlipside.com, and there's a number of articles on it about how the Israel lobby is adversely affecting the Berkeley Unified Schools and the city government. And apparently, one of the members involved in this attack on the Berkeley schools has connections to an organization that was formed to provide alternative ethnic studies, which of course would treat settler colonialism in Palestine very differently and would essentially be propaganda. The same organization has encouraged teachers to not direct your students to explore information on the internet freely, but to direct them to websites like the Anti-Defamation League and other sites that present a very one-sided idea of the conflict in Palestine and Israel. So that's the kind of corruption too. It's not just pure corruption to influence ideas and vote in favor of a lobby and against the interests of the residents, but there's also corruption in the school board, where it seems there's a real concerted interest to get a new curriculum in there. And you know, that's there's money to be made. I'm sure there's ideas to be suppressed and money to be made at the same time.
Right. And then to sort of spiral addressing that, like, oh, we don't feel safe, you know, it's like, okay, everybody, we are dedicated here to creating an atmosphere of safety for all beings. There you go, everybody's safe. Because the Dementors are always and only self-referential. Whatever they accuse others of doing is what they're doing. And just again, you know, our awareness of danger theme. Trump has said that he will deport all pro-Palestinian protesters, protectors, even if they are U.S. citizens, right? So just to know, to be fully informed as you vote, you know, to be fully informed to definitely vote no matter what. And Trump has also said that he would deport all of the legally here Haitian immigrants in Springfield. And that he would deport, you know, millions of immigrants, some of whom are here legally, and he said, and it will be bloody. Just to put this on your work thing of consideration so that the better angels of our nature are guiding our vote, you know, for the best possible scenario. And just want to, there's that crucial dynamic. The midheaven IC of our convening and conjuring, you know, with the law, is Kamala Harris's full moon. The image for it is a person in deep gloom, unnoticed, a glowing circle of angels. And I love that image, because when we're alone, we can feel like, ugh. But when we gather, here we are, Matt, when we gather and catalyze the Berkeley community and the global community, then we are the glowing circle of angels, you know, with a surprising audience, and that we're here to expand your voice, well, the voice of what you represent, absolutely. So we're going to take a very short break with Robbie Robertson, just to remind us of our council. I should also say that I'm Michaela Gaston, and my Equinox Zoom, which was truly magic, is available for free, just because it's so good. You know, we want to bring in all of our skills of spiraling out of polarity, which feeds tyranny, into animating the desirable and participation in every way, in the streets and calling the representatives and backstage imagining and all of those things. So that's available for free at coyotenetworknews.com. And so our splendid voice today is Matt O'Brien, and we are here to honor the Peace and Justice Commission of Berkeley and its ceasefire resolution, and for humans to rise up going, this is just sane, reverent common sense. This is minimal. And we'll come right back to that. Yes, the many, many great quotes. And can you say your website again?
Sure. It's BerkeleyFlipside.com.
Thank you.
It's called Flipside because we have a local publication called Berkeleyside. But it really, it's demonstrated a kind of a lack of interest in publishing any or doing any investigative research regarding the influence of all these machinations to suppress the resolution, or in general alienating anyone in the city government by reporting on corruption.
So, okay, we're gonna come right back to that. We're gonna take our Robbie Robertson break just to invoke the atmosphere of what we're doing. There's always 20, 30 stories going on at once, and we'll be right back with Matt, you know, and the commission and the ceasefire resolution. Here we go, Robbie Robertson.
This was the way of it. Let the story fires be lighted. Let our circle be strong and full of medicine. Hear me. This is my dream song that I'm singing for you. This is my power song that is taking me to the edge. This is rock medicine, the talking tree, the singing water. Listen, I am dancing underneath you.
The Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. That was Robbie Robertson, bless his ancestral self, just reminding us, you know, what it is to be fully participating Earth citizens, you know, part of all the dynamic, that kind of feeling that music conveys of vast beauty and kinship. We're all in this dream together, you know, and we want, you know, grief artfully expressed becomes a sacrament of kinship. Let our story fires be lighted and full of medicine. It's a river, it's a chant, it's a medicine story that we're animating to quicken the moral compass in all human hearts, right? And just aside from that, you know, Amakayla and Gaston and I did a really good, really useful to all of us Equinox Zoom on the Equinox, and it's available for free. I highly recommend it. At coyotenetworknews.com, you just click on the thing and you can download it or watch it, just because it has a lot of resources and magic and laying things out and everything relevant to how our guest Matt is guiding us. And so that's a crucial dynamic. So yes, and then before we go back to the micro and the macro, Bill McKibben sends his regards. I asked him to be, you know, a guest, and he said no, because he's on a ardent, dedicated swing state tour because he said this election is the most important election. The earth is on the ballot, you know, and he wrote just a little bit, if you want to understand the horror still unfolding in Appalachia, and actually if you want to understand the 21st century, you need to remember one thing. Warm air holds more water vapor than cold. You know, and then he says, as Hurricane Helene, you know, and I mean, I've heard from many friends who were, Swannanoa, you know, who survived Swannanoa, the people I know, many did not, and Asheville, as Hurricane Helene swept in across a superheated Gulf of Mexico. It's all related, its winds rapidly intensified. That part is easy to understand. Helene's landfall gave the U.S. a record 8 Cat 4 or Cat 5 Atlantic hurricane landfalls, some of them, and there were 40 inches, four feet of rain fell on Asheville, 4 feet of rain. And he says, this isn't just there, you know, it's everywhere. And he delineates, you know, it's at the same time, massive flooding in Turkey, the Philippines, Saudi Arabia, Spain, Marseille, Milan, India, Wales, Guatemala, Morocco, Algeria, Vietnam, Croatia, Nigeria, Thailand, Greece, Romania, Poland, the Czech Republic, Austria, with the Danube hitting new heights across Central Europe. He said, it's hard to open social media without seeing cell phone videos of cars washing down steep street genre everywhere. Everywhere, the flows are muddy brown and swirling with power. But all that water has to come from somewhere, and the extra vapor in the air implies that in some places, it's disappearing skyward. And those stories are at least as dangerous, if not as dramatic in a daily way. You know, how do we know that drought is on the increase? That's easy. A new drought emoji of a dead tree is about to be approved. You know, the Amazon's on fire. You know, and so he ties it all together. We're out of margin. We're watching the climate crisis play out in real time. You know, and this is, it's all one story. He says, this means that our political leaders are finally going to have to make some hard choices. You know, he goes into that. But he says, you know, he feels ardently about voting for Harris and Walz, ardently, because the earth is on the ballot. He says, if Trump wins, there's no need for a deal. The liquid natural gas projects will be approved and permitting reform for renewables will be dead. If Harris wins and the Dems hold the Senate, at least there's a chance. We're working on that. Trickster works on that. Where's the opening? That environmentalists can make it easier to build solar and wind without yielding on the massive carbon bomb and disaster that is the liquid natural gas export. That's why I'm in Montana today, trying in my small way to help John Tester, yes, in his uphill fight to retain a Senate seat. It's why I'm in the swing states most of the time between now and November 5th. Yeah, he just went home today for a brief pit stop. Thousands of third act volunteers, yeah, people in their 60s to 90s, you know, woof, woof, everybody. We want everybody stepping up. You know, if you have an affection for the earth and for life, you know, just vote truly your conscience, you know, and about everything else go, is this the thing or the symbol of the thing, about the third party kind of a thing? It's like, so he's ardent, bless his. You know, you can join us on our Silver Wave tour in Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Nevada. Please join us even if you haven't reached 60 yet. We don't check IDs. We love working with young people. The bottom line is we're in a terrible corner now, and that's why all those pictures of floating cars really means we don't have room left to make trade-offs and deals. Physics isn't in a bargaining mood. Every battle is dishearteningly existential now. So that's Bill McKibben, bless his long, long-term dedicated self, going, this election is super important. The earth is on the ballot as well, you know, and as Trump said, you know, to Bibi, you know, finish the genocide. I mean, those are his words. Those are his words. You know, so if anybody thinks like, oh, I have a moral stance, I'm going to vote for a digital design, you know, that, and just I just have to do a little public service, and we will get back to you, Matt, because it's all woven together. It's like, you know, Bill Weinman is a great traditional lefty who was wonderfully grumpy and good on Facebook, but for years has been writing about, you know, Jill Stein, no, you know, pro-Palestinian genocide in Syria. You know, raised $11 million from disappointed Hillary voters in 2016 to do a recount, kept all that money, didn't use it for a recount. And now it's going to play a minute of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez just putting some things on the table.
This is a little spicy, but I have thoughts. I feel like I should save this for a live. I'm not coming for people who are thinking about this. You, I'll talk to you. What I have a problem with is the fact that if you are running for president, you're the de facto leader of your party. And first of all, trust me on this. I run as a third party candidate in New York. I'm also run as a Working Families Party candidate in addition to running as a Democrat. Because trust me, I've been on record that about my criticisms of a two-party system. So this is not about that. But you are the leader of your party. And if you run for years and years and years and years and years in a row, and your party has not grown, and you don't add city council seats, and you don't add down ballot candidates, and you don't add state electeds, that's bad leadership. And that to me is what's upsetting. Because if you have been your party's nominee for 12 years in a row, 4 years ago and 4 years before that and 4 years before that, and you cannot grow your movement pretty much at all and can't pursue any successful strategy, and all you do is show up once every 4 years to speak to people who are justifiably pissed off, but you're just showing up once every 4 years to do that, you're not serious. You're not authentic. To me, it does not read as authentic. It reads as predatory. I'm sorry. I'm just saying it. Because as a person, I endorse Working Families Party candidates. I endorse DSA candidates. I take risks, and I endorse even in primaries against Democrats when it's merited. What does this person do to grow power?
Right. Right. So that's AOC, you know, again, exhorting what Matt is dedicated to, and it hums in all of our hearts, which is community engagement, community engagement. And Rep. Rua is very ardent about this, too, you know, and very ardent about, you know, ranked choice voting, really crucial, because that is the way where one can, you know, again, spiral out of two-party system. You know, you vote for your number one, your number two, your number three voice, then you can have credible and I think better third-party candidates. But right now it symbolizes the thing. But just to keep that in mind, I think distilling it and handing it to Matt, it's an exhortation to community engagement. And Rep. Rua is all about that. She says, we're small and scrappy. We've been engaged. We do a lot of things. You know, we are involved in just the way that Matt and the Berkeley Peace and Justice Council, you know, is again ardent too, so it's all connected. So I just want to toss it back to you, Matt, as well, going, all right, exhortation to community engagement and long term, right? I mean, you've been dedicated for a long time, right?
Well, yes, and there's other people who have been doing much more dedicated work than me over years, I must say, Caroline. It's just that I guess since I'm a frequent listener to your show, I reached out to you, and, you know, there's an awful lot of people who care. And I'll tell you what, when I was at the meeting Monday night, it was really, as you were saying about community engagement, it was really encouraging to see this vast diversity of people who took their time to come to the meeting. You know, it's hard to get people up to spend an evening at a you know, a city function. But this brought people from so many ages and backgrounds to just say, please stop ignoring us. One of the commentators, she made a funny comment where she mentioned all the neighboring Bay Area cities that had made done a resolution. And she was talking about what shame Berkeley has brought by on itself and on us residents by squashing this resolution. And she went through the cities, and then she, you know, Oakland, San Francisco, she said, even Hayward, you know, and Berkeley hasn't been able to do it because of the influence of the lobby group. And one of the lobby group that's been most active in Berkeley, both attacking the curriculum in the public schools, ginning up this idea that there's anti-Semitism in the schools and hauling our superintendent in front of Congress, sending our mayor on an all-expenses-paid trip to Israel and doing all kinds of other stuff is the Jewish Community Relations Council, the JCRC. It seems to be, at least here in the Bay Area, the group that the lobby group for Israel that is most active at the local level of school districts and city councils. And I wanted to just put that out there because what we citizens are fighting against too is very well-funded and well-organized groups that have a lot of access to the media that are able to push their narrative to a lot more people than those of us who are looking for government accountability and justice and spending our tax money properly. We don't have as much, we don't have the resources, the organization, the wealth, and the contacts with the media. I mean, there's a lot of people whose full-time job it is to organize in favor of Israel and to attack those who oppose sending billions to Israel. I know, for example, I have a niece who's a college student, and she and friends of hers have been doxxed. So by people who resent Americans and their freedom of speech, and they resent that Americans are expressing opposition to what Israel's doing and to Americans funding Israel's crimes. So it's become very personal for a lot of people. And, you know, for a lot of people, you think, gosh, look what's happening in Washington. Look at how these lobby groups affect the Congress and Senate and the president. All these people just sell themselves and they don't have the courage or integrity to stand up for what's right, you know, and you feel so impotent and so hard to affect change. But then when your own city council person is influenced by another one of these lobby groups to also suppress your voice, suppress the voice of your community at the local level, it makes you really alarmed and it really makes you worried about the United States and about democracy, you know. When I heard about the attack on the peaceful protest at UCLA that included people identifying themselves as Israelis and saying, we do it differently, I just realized, no. We Americans need to stick up for our cherished values of free speech, freedom to assembly, and freedom to redress of the government. And I have to say, it saddens me to say, that those who favor Israel, the Israel lobby, they're attacking our rights as Americans. Berkeley years ago used to have a weekly, it was called the Berkeley Daily Planet, but it came out every week, the printed version. And it was quite popular and it would inform people of local events and local news. And then a campaign was started against them. A couple of guys who identified as Jewish Americans really took umbrage at the fact that this paper, the Berkeley Daily Planet, was publishing letters to the editor. So they didn't even author them. They just published letters to the editor that would express opposition to Israeli policies. And these guys were so upset that there would be a platform for someone to write letters in opposition to Israel to, that they began a campaign to intimidate and terrorize local businesses that advertised in that paper. They'd go around to little ma and pa restaurants and say, listen, you advertise here. If you continue to advertise, we're going to organize a boycott targeting your restaurant. And they did that to people. And guess what? We lost the Berkeley Daily Planet. It still exists on the web, but it's not the paper it used to be. You can't find it in a print version. And so we citizens were deprived of a newspaper because some individuals took it upon themselves they felt that we should not be able to read opinions in opposition to Israel. So that was a number of years ago, and that's what made me realize, oh my gosh, we as Americans are being attacked by other Americans because they don't like our views about a foreign country. And I realized there's something really, really, really wrong there. And the American public needs to wake up to that. And that was years ago. And now we've woken up to it, but only because there's a genocide now. And thank God our young people have been doing these protests at the university campuses.
Right. No, and may it continue and overcome the substantial suppressive tyranny, and keep in mind the larger tyranny that is brewing in the Trump, Opus Dei, Vance, Peter Thiel, Leonard Leo, nefarious money, which wants to delete the government, rage, retire all government employees. And they are, Vance is quoted as saying, you know, America needs to overcome its phobia about dictators. We need a dictator. He said this. And that's what Leonard Leo and Opus Dei, which is really, really creepy black magic, like Steve Bannon, who's like a third-rate Aleister Crowley, they're using black magic. I mean, really, the power to kidnap all that you say, you know. So it's micro and it's macro, you know. And to address it on the local level is as you're doing and as you're guiding us to do, is essential for the macro. It's like, you know, the thuggishness. You're right, the mafioso thuggishness of putting the Daily Planet out of business. That's right. Yeah, all of that, you know. And we spoke briefly, you know, just we won't go into the whole thing. We did a whole show on the U.S. Liberty, with which you're familiar, right? But it was 1967. It was U.S. spy ship, but they were spying on what Israel was doing in the Golan Heights, lying about it and doing all kinds of nefarious stuff. And the Israeli government bombed them, and chased the machine gunned the people escaping in lifeboats. And LBJ at the time told Newsweek the whole story, going, "Oh my God, Israel just attacked and sunk this ship, and terrible people were killed." You know, and the Prime Minister of Israel, I can't remember who he was in 1967, but he called LBJ up and said, "If you do this, we will finish you. We will call you anti-Semitic. And let us remind you that we control, you know, over a third of the electoral votes." And my brother-in-law was there, and due to no honor on his part, really, although a good guy in many ways, you know, when LBJ took the call, and LBJ said, they've got me. They got me by the balls. You know, I got it. And they suppressed the story. So there's that. And then, you know, millions of examples that we sort of exchanged backstage. But, yeah, so for America to vote out, you know, the tyrannical obedience to AIPAC and to the current and past and, you know, Israeli regime is essential for democracy. Let's say we like the democratic experiment. We'd like it to continue and to fulfill its promise, you know, and that's part of your dedicated ardor. So again, you know, just to guide us in our last minutes here. Well, I love every part of the article. I've posted it in the radio promo and everything too. But so somebody, you'll know the people, but said you don't even spell the word anti-Semitism right, which just anyway. So Taylor, who co-wrote the resolution with Lippmann, defended it, saying they consulted many members of the Jewish community. Right. This is all embracing both Zionist and non-Zionist, and referenced many United Nations statements in crafting the proposal. Craft is such a good word. And then she said, you know, and over 200 people, you know, many with keffiyehs, you know, carried posters and flags, you know, remained respectful. And, you know, she said, "We know the organizers, the commissioners of this know the resolution is not the end-all be-all of this genocide. We know it's not even going to have a material impact, but it's a step in preserving our identity," said Luchi B., a Berkeley doula who has family from the West Bank and declined to give her full name. Yeah, we want an atmosphere of safety where people can speak out. You know, what I'd said to you backstage is I was on the Muslims for Harris call, which was many worthy Islamic people going from deep grief and deep considering, and you know, and they had much to say. And I was in contact with the organizers going, "Oh, it would be great to play some clips," you know. And she said, "Well, I have to get a release form because we have been subject to many death threats." You know, it's like, so everywhere we are, you know, and this is where Ami really did a good job, where we're quelling the atmosphere, like just cool that out. you know, and an atmosphere of embrace and kinship, you know, to the Haitian immigrants, and the call to support the Haitian immigrants was really good, you know, protecting Daily Planet and democracy in Berkeley. And let me give you just the last 2 minutes for anything that you want to do. So we have the critique, which is important, you know, and then what would you ideally like to see? You know, you want people call it, what would you ideally like to see now? Just if anything were possible.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I this morning wrote an email that I haven't sent yet to my district, my council person, who incidentally replaced a peace and justice commissioner who would not change the wording of the resolution with a woman of the lobby group who voted against it, of course. And so I have written him an email saying, okay, now that despite city council's best efforts to subvert the democratic process and suppress our voices, what will you do now that the peace and yet the Peace and Justice Commission and the citizens of Berkeley overcame it and adopted the resolution? And what will you as a city council person do? Will you vote for it, or will you continue to side with the lobby groups and against your constituents? So I would encourage all Berkeley residents and anybody who's dealing with government officials on this issue or similar issues, hold them accountable, knock on those doors, call, let them know how you feel, and organize if you can. I know that when I was last talking with him, and he was giving me all these reasons for firing the city councilor, the Peace and Justice Commissioner, and putting in a really kind of problematic person, and speaking like a bureaucrat. And what it reminded me of was the famous phrase by the writer Hannah Arendt,
Born on my birthday.
She escaped Nazi Germany, and then later she went to Israel, and she made some, you know, she made comparisons between the fascism she saw in Germany and the fascism she saw in Israel. And she came up with the phrase, the banality of evil. Yeah. And as I was dealing with my council member, that's what I thought about. And then I was at a mayoral forum, and I had the chance to ask a question of one of the candidates, council member Sophie Hong, who's running for mayor now, who's been the prime mover behind all this stuff against ethnic studies in the Berkeley schools and against quashing the resolution. And I put her, why have these other cities adopted a resolution and we haven't? Is it because we feel differently in Berkeley, or is it because of the politics and the influence of the lobby group? The reason she gave was, well, it's not the city of Berkeley's business to do foreign policy, but in reality, the city council created this body, the Peace and Justice Commission, for it. So again, with her, I thought, my God, the banality of evil is confronting me right here.
Well, we're riding out on that right now. The banality of evil. We're composting the banality of evil in the Eclipse Cauldron. Thank you so much, Matt O'Brien, and your dedicated work, and all of your kin, and all of Berkeley citizens stepping up for a ceasefire resolution. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, you know, a wonderful, wonderful ally. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. For many ways to play, starting a mentoring thing on Saturday, again, free Equinox. And thanks again, Matt O'Brien. Woof, woof.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. Peace and blessings to you, and much gratitude to you.
Excellent. Woof, woof.